to FinCircle. This is Ed Angelus. We're now on Season 3, Episode 37 of this podcast. And this time we'll be discussing another interesting topic about the crypto travel rule policy. For today's podcast episode, we have invited once again Mr. Dominic G, a seasoned banker, a crypto compliance professional, and an AML transaction monitoring advisor, as he discussed with us its significant relevance to our digital economy. So let's get started. Thank you for listening to FinCircle and welcome to our podcast. In 2019, the Financial Action Task Force, an intergovernmental body that initiates anti-money laundering or AML policies for G7 and an additional 30 or so developed countries, recommended a coordinated approach to combat money laundering and terrorist financing. The rule, formerly known as FATF Recommendation Number 16, requires VASP, or Virtual Asset Service Providers, to communicate the information of the originators and beneficiaries of crypto transactions that exceed a certain threshold. More specifically, the regulations requires VASP to exchange information regarding the identities of the originator and beneficiary whenever the amount transacted is above $1,000. In essence, whenever crypto worth over $1,000 is transacted between two parties, the crypto service provider of the sender is expected to communicate the personally identifiable information, or PII, of the sender to the crypto service provider of the recipient and vice versa. While this is a given, member states can choose to interpret the guidance and implement versions that best suit their local crypto industries. For instance, the threshold at which the crypto travel rule kicks in the US is $3,000. And the rules come into the play when the value of the crypto transaction exceeds $3,000. In such cases, VASP are required to exchange information regarding the amount transacted, the execution date, as well as the identity of the crypto service provider. Switzerland is known to have a strict version of the travel rule, where regulators require the identification of private wallets interacting with local VASP. In addition to the extra information required by individual regulators, the FATF recommends the following data ought to be transmitted back and forth by the Virtual Asset Service Provider, or VAS. Number 1. The names of the sender and the recipient. Number 2. The address of the sender. And number 3. The account number of the sender and the recipient. The travel rule existed before FATF's 2019 recommendations. Initially, the regulation was targeted at banks and financial institutions as part of the initiatives for mitigating money laundering. In essence, FATF's action in 2019 only expanded this rule such that existing AML regulations can be replicated in the crypto industry. It is worth mentioning that prior to the issuance of the crypto travel rule policy in 2019, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, or FinCEN, under the U.S. Bank Secrecy Act, or BSA, had imposed a similar rule on BAS operating within its jurisdiction. Hence, unlike most nations, the United States did not need to formulate a new regulation from scratch to comply with FATF's recommendations. Under this rule, the FinCEN requires crypto asset service providers to confirm that crypto transactions do not originate from or are not sent to sanctioned countries or companies. The first challenge, though, associated with the crypto travel rule revolves around the non-uniform approach to the implementation of this regulation in different regions. As initially mentioned, the requirements of the travel rule differ from country to country. Hence, the VAS are burdened with the task of incorporating robust self-compliance systems that would somehow consider the different requirements of various countries and implement them accordingly. The non-uniformity of the crypto travel rules is popularly called the sunrise problem. Bearing in mind that VAS are required to exchange transaction details, there is a need for an interoperable communication system such that VAS can easily receive and send PII. This only means that the entirety of the crypto industry must embrace a collaborative approach to come up with the ideal data and communication standards. Understandably, this is a tad difficult because the crypto industry historically favors a decentralized model of operation. That said, crypto service providers are coming to terms with the situation, with many adopting protocols specially designed to aid the transfer and collection of encrypted data. Examples of these protocols are the following. One of them is what we call OpenBAS. The other one is called SHIFT, as well as the CRISA, or T-R-I-S-A, and TRP. More importantly, the crypto industry has reached a consensus over a single data messaging format for all travel rule protocols. And this format is called IBMS 101. Another main talking point is the perceived effect of the influx of digital asset regulation by a faction of the crypto community. Some believe that regulations like the travel rule empower regulators with the tools and data required to surveil and sanction crypto uses. Also worth mentioning is the apparent security risks to which BAS will be exposed while transmitting users' information. It is crucial to set up additional security systems that will shield users' data from such risks. And lastly, there are data privacy compliant risks that the travel rule exposes BAS to. Much as BAS or virtual asset service providers are trying to adhere to the travel rule, they must also ensure that their actions are somehow aligned with the data privacy laws of the jurisdiction where they operate. So this is a very simple thing, and this is also a complicated thing. Is travel rule policy worth mentioning? In today's podcast episode, we have invited once again a seasoned banker, a fraud and compliance professional specialized in cryptocurrency transfer of assets, Mr. Dominic J., to discuss with us the critical importance of crypto travel rule policy. It's great to have you again, Dom, and welcome back to FinCircle.
Great. Thanks for having me. It's good to be back to talk to you.
Let's probably start by defining on what is travel rule policy in the context of transfer of crypto assets and its value proposition to our digital economy.
Sure. Essentially, it's the 1996 FinCEN funds transmittal rule applied to crypto. So traditional financial institutions have had the rule since the 90s. And in 2019, the FATF adopted a version of that in their recommendation 16 in their guidance in 2019. And since then, there's been sort of an evolution, further definition of that by the FATF. So if you think about sort of, I guess, the regulatory environment, yeah, the FATF is an intergovernmental body that makes recommendations. And then it's up to jurisdictions to take those recommendations and then implement them in their jurisdiction. So since 2019, what we've seen is further development of the FATF recommendation and then jurisdiction interpretations of that recommendation. But it's essentially a rule that says at the time of a crypto transfer, certain originator beneficiary information needs to be transmitted immediately and securely. Those are kind of, two key phrases in it, from the originating institution to the beneficiary institution, or rather the beneficiary at that institution.
One interesting question, Dom, is why is the travel rule controversial?
Yeah, it's controversial for a couple of different reasons, yeah. And you saw this with the industry reaction in 2019 when it was first announced, yeah. So there is the anonymous, pseudo-anonymous nature of the blockchain and the nature of crypto. Some people ideologically believe in that. Other people, it was just the way things were, and they worked in that environment. So that's, I guess, one of the core things. The immediate industry reaction was kind of, it's unnecessary. Yeah, it's going to be hard to do, and it's really, I guess, people can avoid it. Yeah, if you transfer to a non-custodial and then to where you want it to go, you can essentially kind of avoid the travel rule as it was originally stated. So that was the initial reaction. But soon after that, what you saw was a lot of industry collaboration and a lot of entrepreneurship around it. So groups formed and created underlying protocols, a group formed and defined messaging standards. And these are global teams of industry people, firms, experts, ex-regulators, and that kind of stuff. So there was a lot of activity around, okay, how do we make this work and how we do it collaboratively? So I guess from an initial negative almost pessimistic view of it. It then turned, people turned that around, and then you saw a lot of collaboration, a lot of innovation, and a lot of creation.
Where are we now in terms of AML crypto regulation, and where do you think we are going?
I mean, since we last spoke with respect to the travel rule, we're a lot further. We've got live systems, protocols, approaches to doing it. More and more jurisdictions have regulations in place, and if they're not live, i.e., you have to comply now, there are dates for when you do have to comply. So in terms of the travel rule, it's much clearer where we are. I think generally AML crypto compliance rules are clearer. So the EU is quite clear, the UK is quite clear, the US has been for a while, Singapore, Gibraltar. What we're seeing is just, I guess, tweaks to things. But overall, we're in a pretty good place. In terms of what we call major jurisdictions, so I think we're further down the road now, and it's a lot clearer for crypto entities as to what they have to do.
There are some concerns, Dom, about data privacy, which somehow contradicts some of the clauses on the crypto travel rule policy. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would agree. It's a good point. I mean, with the travel rule, for instance, you will be collecting personally identifiable information. You'll need to, so you'll collect it, you'll need to store it, and then you're going to be required to transmit it. So you've got your own jurisdiction's data privacy rules, which you'll be obligated to. But then, because you're potentially transferring that data to other jurisdictions, you may have to consider the other jurisdictions. And obviously, GDPR is the big one that everybody needs to be concerned about. So it's a concern. I think, when you look at the solutions out there, they're all concerned about that and addressing that. But it's a consideration that people need to take into account. I think the solutions have. It's understanding what's your collection process, what's your storage process, and then what's your transmittal process. And I think, you see concerns about who you're sending it to, because are they, again, going to store it? What are they going to do with it? How secure is it? So I think this is, it's being addressed in the protocols, it's being addressed in the solutions, but it's definitely something that people need to be concerned about going forward.
What is a virtual asset service provider or VAS, and how does this impact the crypto compliance?
So VAS, virtual asset service provider, is a generic term that the FATF came up with to describe entities that do things like exchange fiat for virtual assets, or vice versa, to exchange virtual assets for other virtual assets, transferring virtual assets, safeguarding, i.e., custodying virtual assets, and then offering an issuer's sale of virtual assets. So those are sort of the broad, the categories that if you did any one of those or multiple one of those things, you're a VASP. Different jurisdictions have different names. So Singapore, you're a DPT, digital payment token payment service provider, and other jurisdictions have other names. I think the key thing is understanding what the jurisdiction defines as the activities undertaken that qualify you as a VASP, and then potentially obligated to register or get licensed to undertake those activities in the various jurisdictions.
The travel rule DOM presents a novel challenge for the cryptocurrency industry, as blockchains are not designed to send personally identifiable information alongside transactions. How does this and the cross-jurisdictional transactions affects the crypto travel rule policy?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. And I think this is where sort of the industry collaborations and the entrepreneurship come in. So there's underlying protocols for the transfer. Transfer rule protocol is one, OpenVAS another. Again, people came together to build these protocols to enable the transfer. The messaging standards that came out of the InterVAS working group around what are the data elements that go into the messages, that was again a remarkable industry collaboration that occurred very quickly, I think in 2019. And then we're seeing some jurisdiction specific solutions. So the US Travel Rule Working Group formed, and it was essentially the large regulated US exchanges and custodians. So they got together to build a solution for them in the US, which they're now trying to see into other jurisdictions. And then you've got SaaS providers, Nota Bene is one of them, and then other providers like Jift, their Veriscope product. So they're obviously all concerned about privacy, they're concerned about security. There are real live options now, whereas a year or so ago, you know, things were still in beta, but there are options that regulated entities, covered entities have in terms of doing the work. And that works, you know, changes to your UI, changes to your database, changes to your ability to report, API connections, you know, to a service provider or directly to the underlying protocols. You know, the challenges are sort of typical software or software implementation, vendor implementation, project problems. But they're also, you know, specific to the crypto world. And again, it comes down to how do you collect the stuff, how do you store it, and how do you then transmit it.
What are the challenges, Dom, that we presently have on crypto regulation and mitigation processes that you have observed in the marketplace that somehow addresses some of these hurdles?
Yeah, I mean, for a VASP, one of the hurdles is the number of vendors that they have to engage with. Yeah, so you're going to need some non-face-to-face identity verification vendor. You're going to need name screening. You might need some kind of proof of address solution. You need blockchain analytics, market abuse monitoring, AML flow of funds monitoring, and now travel rules. So there's a lot of different problems that you need to solve for. And there's not a lot of integration right now between those vendors. So you're going to have to do a lot of integrations, and you're going to have to be looking at a lot of different systems in order to solve for those problems that the regulations, and when I say problems, no, I don't mean problems, but you know, you've got to be able to solve for them for the most part on an individual basis. So I think that's kind of the biggest hurdle practically for people who are building out the compliance systems, and then on a day-to-day basis have to, you know, observe the alerts, investigate the alerts, dismiss the alerts, or report suspicious transactions.
How do you foresee, Dom, the future of crypto compliance?
I think broadly the frameworks, we understand what the frameworks are and will be for kind of the entities that have been around for a while. So your custodians, your exchanges, those kind of entities. There will be tweaks to it. DeFi DAOs, protocols that, essentially a code, those things are developed over the last year or 2 years and will continue to develop, will be brought into the frameworks in some way. I think the biggest challenge is, if you look at the traditional finance world, the term effectiveness has come up a lot in the last year and a half, coming out of FATF, coming out of Wolfsburg, coming out of various other industry groups or regulators and jurisdictions. So, I mean, this is all down to it costs too much. We miss too much. Overall, it's not effective. So I think the challenge for the crypto world is to how to get ahead of what could be a problem of effectiveness down the road by doing things now to try and mitigate. And I think, it's learning the lessons of what's going on in the traditional finance world and trying to apply those to the crypto world earlier and more effectively. I think my view is jurisdiction-specific collaborations will be the most helpful to that end. Yeah, so vendors, operators, regulators collaborating in specific jurisdictions or around the specific issues that they have. It's definable, it's manageable, and you're all in the same time zone, you all got the same concerns. So I think that is the challenge. Those industry collaborations are hard to get off the ground. They need to be focused on certain areas. People have got their day jobs, they have other concerns. So the effective ones, need some driving force, they need some focus. But I think that's the immediate thing that needs to happen in order to sort of, address the future concern of effectiveness.
Given your wealth of experience on this subject matter, Dom, any word of advice that you can give with our financial institutions, regulators, and other relevant stakeholders in relation to the crypto travel rule policy?
I think greater alignment across the jurisdictions around the rules would be probably the most helpful thing. They're different thresholds, they're different threshold types. Sunrise is obviously a factor, so the UK regs don't go into effect until later this year. It's live in Singapore, it's live in the US, it's live in other jurisdictions, the other timelines, so that's known. But the attitude to, say, non-custodial wallets, transfers between entities within your location, within your jurisdiction versus outside your jurisdiction. Again, is it $1 and up, or is it over a certain threshold? So all of those differences cause complications in terms of accepting deposits or sending transfers. So I think that greater alignment across the jurisdictions would be helpful. In terms of the vendors and the underlying protocols, I think there's two things there. So interoperability between the underlying protocols, so that if you're on one system, you can still transfer to another VASP, another system. I think that's a key thing going forward. And then integrations between vendors. You're seeing it a lot rule space where you can integrate your blockchain analytics with your travel rule provider. So you're seeing any risk scores when a transfer is proposed or has been sent. So those integrations between vendors would be helpful. So I think, yeah, that alignment of the rules, interoperability, and then integration.
Very well said. Are there any initiatives that you're currently preoccupied with, Dom, that you would like to share with our podcast listening audience? And what are the easiest way of reaching out or contacting you?
Yeah, sure. So for the last 2 years, I've been working at Equinix, which is a Singapore-based exchange, part of a broader group. Unfortunately, in the last couple of weeks, they've announced the closure of the exchange. So my role there will come to an end. So I guess in terms of what I'm currently preoccupied with is working out what this project's role is. This space is, as we've talked, it's dynamic. It's intellectually challenging, whether that's day-to-day or looking to the future. So I'd like to stay in this space. Vendors are coming up with really products. But it's a developing space. So happy to, I'd like to stay in that, in this space. In terms of reaching me, I'm on LinkedIn. If you search Dominic G, I searched it this morning. There's probably about 6 or 8 of us, which I didn't realize there were so many Dominic G's out there. Or via your email, DominicPG@gmail.com. And I'll be at Equinix for the next month or so. So Dominic.G@Equinix.com.
Thanks so much, Dom, for sharing us your valuable insights on the crypto travel rule policy and its significant relevance to our digital economy. Looking forward to having you again in our future podcast episode. And we wish you great success on your forthcoming endeavor.
It's great to talk to you again. Thanks for the invitation, and good luck with the project. I like the other podcasts that I listen to, and wish you all the best with that.
Possible by International KYC Group. We would like to express our sincere gratitude to Mr. Dominic G on sharing us his insightful views on the crypto compliance space. We would like to hear from you. Share us your thoughts regarding our topics and send us a message on the Anchor Voice message box. Your message could end up on our future podcast episode. Make sure you never miss any episodes of FinCircle by clicking the subscribe button or follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Radio Public, Amazon Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Audible, Overcast, TuneIn, and Anchor.fm. You can also reach us on our website at fincirclewordpress.com and our Facebook page at FinCircle Podcast. This concludes our podcast episode today. Thank you for listening on FinCircle. This is Ed Angeles. Let's catch up again soon. Thank you.